Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, this experience has been fantastic. I'm really thankful for the opportunity to be able to share what I've learned. I know that I'm still learning. I'm still growing. I've got a ways to go, but I hope that anyone who is looking to grow their business or, you know, maybe start working more professionally as a filmmaker, I hope that they can use something here to that end.
Hi, welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Anything that has to do with making films, Cora Linda has done. She knows what it takes to produce an independent film. Today, we are taking a behind-the-scenes look into how Cora Linda fuses innovation and courage with excellence. No easy feat. Cora Linda, just to give you a little bit more of a background, is an independent filmmaker and entrepreneur. As a writer, producer, director, Cora founded Space Dream Productions in 2013, releasing her first major film project in 2016 with her husband, Spaceship, a musician and filmmaker. Space Dream Productions is an independent film and music production company grounded in the idea that storytellers are ambassadors of humanity, tasked with sharing pieces of ourselves with each other. Filmmakers have the added responsibility of creating visual worlds around these stories. For this reason, Cora and Spaceship focus on films that not only entertain, but also aim to showcase pieces of humanity. All pieces of humanity, not just edgy, indie, or simply uplifting, but everything in between. The mission of Space Dream Productions is to amplify genuine pieces of life that may not always be front and center in large studio projects and to elevate hardworking, exceptional artists in music and film. Since September 2016, over 50 projects have moved or are moving through Space Dream Productions. About 30 completed projects have received over 50 film festival acceptances internationally. They have earned 80 award nominations and 31 awards, including Best Director, awarded to both Cora Linda and Spaceship for three different films, Best Animation, Best Drama Short, and Best Picture. In 2019, Cora was awarded the MECO Award for Courage, Innovation, and Excellence in a Career in Film. And she works to mentor other filmmakers through her podcast, Filmmaking, Actually. And those were the areas that we thought were, Cora and I thought, would be wonderful to talk about because she's been awarded and confirmed for her courage, innovation, and excellence. Also, I just want to mention a few of your films that you've got kind of in the bank here. Cora and Spaceship are known for Hit Record on TV, Names on the Wall, Bringer of War, Spoons and Me, Mark and the Martian, Tidings, Dual Flush, and Gone Gray. Films coming soon include Catching the Light, Comic Relief, In Herself, an untitled Holocaust documentary, and To Catch the Light. A complete list of current festival selections and upcoming screenings you can easily find at spacedreamfilm.com. Space Dream Films. That would be good. All right. So that's a long intro, Cora, but I just wanted to make sure that our listeners really understand the breadth and the depth of how you're invested in this entrepreneurial life of filmmaking. So welcome to We Mentor Mondays. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me, Nancy. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm terrific. I'm so excited. I've been excited for, you know, since we started communicating. And I would just like to reinforce to listeners, you and I met through LinkedIn, and I think it's a very treasured medium to find people that you're looking for and who you want to talk to and do business with. So I'd like to reinforce that.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. Okay. And where in the world am I finding you?
I am in the world of dreams.
Are you grounded in some location?
Oh, originally I'm from New York. Our company is technically based in Florida, and we kind of travel to whatever area and base ourselves out of whatever area we are doing projects in.
Okay. And I mentioned earlier that you were honored the MECO Award for Innovation, Courage, and Excellence in 2019, and validating the three qualities that you infuse into your life work. Could you tell us about what that award means? What is the award in a larger context for those of us who aren't aware of it, and what it means to you?
Sure. So the MECO Award is an award that's a special category in a festival in Las Vegas. It was started, I think it was started about 5 or 6 years ago. And the idea was to highlight independent filmmakers who have had a career of courage and excellence. It is made in honor of a really awesome filmmaker and supporter of filmmakers. His name is Mr. Fernando MECO. He is actually a filmmaker himself and an entrepreneur. He heads the Northern Virginia Film and Music Festival and Capitol Film Market. And this award was put together in his honor, and he selects the people who get shortlisted for it, and then the winners. So every year a shortlist gets put out of, I think, about 5 to 6 nominees. And then depending on the year, anywhere from 2 to 3 or 4 people will be awarded. I think the year I was awarded, I was one of 3 recipients. Yeah. So it, and I think there was 5 nominees, like 5 or 6, I don't remember. Anyway, the idea is that, you know, being an independent filmmaker is more than just making a movie, and to do it for a sustained amount of time usually takes innovation and courage and all that, and to do it well. So for me, it was a little bit different because they actually didn't know that I'd only been working like full out. I mean, I've been in and around the film industry for about 20 years, but for myself as like an independent filmmaker, where it was my company and I was running and rolling with it, I'd only been doing it for about 3 years when I was nominated. And like since my first film, as a filmmaker, my first film had come out 3 years earlier. And from the quality of my work, they thought I'd been making movies like as a producer or director for much longer. So they found out after I think I'd already been nominated. And when I won, it felt more like a validation that I was on the right path, and less of like, you know, I look at an Academy Award, it's kind of like an exclamation point at the end of the sentence, like, you're an actor, you know, and you did it. Congratulations. Yeah. Here you go. Like, that's kind of the top of Mount Everest. But for me, the MECO Award, it's more a reminder of who I am and what I want to do and how I want to do it. And it's like, also because I got it kind of early in my indie film career, I felt like I now need to live up to it. So it felt more like an inspiration and less like a validation of who I am. Now sit back and relax. It was, this is who you are now.
Yes. So yeah. Once you've owned it, it was like, and you got awarded for it, it's like, okay, I'm ready to rock it.
Yeah. I'm like, well, now I can't let them down. Now I have to live up to that for the rest of my career.
Yeah, right. Always that degree of excellence always, right, comes with high standards, high expectations, and a lot of pressure. But we learn how to deal with it at different times. We mentor. How do you deal with stress and the pressure?
That is a good question. I'll be honest. Sometimes I cry. You gotta have a good cry or a bad cry. I'm a big fan of focusing. Like, you know, I believe that courage doesn't mean you're not afraid. Courage means you are afraid, or maybe you are afraid, but you do it anyway.
Yeah.
So for me, it's not just a matter of like, oh, you know, I'm, you know, that boss B, and that's just who I am. And that's probably never going to be who I am. But doing anything means making the decision to do it and then doing it. And it isn't an easy decision. It doesn't mean that you have no doubt and have no question. It means that you've thought about it enough to where you at least have enough certainty that maybe this could work. One of my favorite lines from a poem is the, "What if I fall? Oh, my darling, what if you fly?" Mm-hmm. And you have to remember that there's so many times where I've been like, this is terrifying. This is a risk. I don't know if this is going to work. And I have to remind myself, like, what if it does? Like,
yeah.
And that, and I learned from my years and years of working in live event production, there's this sort of culture of like, oh my God, okay, it's stressful. That's fine. And, you know, those are very valid feelings. You can't do anything in that mindset. And you have to, it's okay to panic. It's okay to take a minute. It's okay to go to the bathroom and cry for a minute. You have to calm down. You have to take a breath. You have to find whatever grounding or centering works for you. For me, it's just being very focused in the here and now, really confronting what I have to do and going, okay, how is this going to work? How can I solve this? What can I do about this? That and the reminder that you've never lost until you give up. As long as you keep trying, I mean, maybe it's going to take you forever, but the time is going to pass anyway. So in 20 years, you want to say you spent 20 years trying, or do you want to say that 20 years ago you had a dream that you never even tried for? And anyone who shames you for how long a dream is taking, don't listen to them. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it absolutely is. My dad built this round cabin at age 80.
It was
a wooden cabin. And it was something he had been talking about, I remember, since high school. And I'm, you know, 61 now. And so I just like so appreciated that dream stuck with him. And that before he leaves this earth, he is getting that thing up. So, yeah, he's a testament to never, you know, to always go after your dream. It doesn't matter the time frame. What it matters is you need to make it happen.
I 1000% agree. It's so important.
Let's reflect on your upbringing for a few minutes to understand like where this innovation and courage and high standards of excellence kind of started developing. What was it like? What were you like growing up?
Very creative. I was one of those kids who, you know, rode bikes outside and ran around and climbed trees and went hiking. And
where did you do this?
In New York.
Okay.
I was very lucky to have parents who supported that. And I know this is, my mom was very like, she was just very creative in keeping me busy. I remember once we had, our car had broken down and we had to get the car towed. And we were sitting in like some car rental place or something like that. And I was young. I must have been between like, I don't know, 5 and 6 or something like that. It's a kind of a vague memory.
Were there siblings with you?
No, I was, at that time, I was an only child. Okay. And my mom, I was very bored. And my mom was like, well, and she's like, I know, we're just waiting. Can you do me a favor? Can you tell me how many ceiling tiles are there and on the ceiling? It looks like there's so many. Can you count and tell me how many there are? And she was so earnest about it. I was like, oh, okay. So I sat there, you know, 1, 2, 3, and I sat there and counted all that. I mean, it kept me busy while we're waiting in line. But years later, I was like, my mom did not need to know how many ceiling tiles there were. And she was just so like, she would just do things that kind of kept me occupied in the world around me. So it kind of helped me to see things and to focus. And I was always like singing songs or dancing or painting or playing. Like it was a very kind of like supported lifestyle. And it wasn't even because, you know, oh, we had so much money and that was why I had all this free time. It was because I was a kid and my parents understood that. And, you know, I actually learned later. I mean, my mom went back to college when I was a kid and then she went to law school and she put herself through all of that while working a part-time job. And my dad, you know, worked odd jobs before going to nursing school. We were not a wealthy family, but I never felt it. I never knew that, you know, oh, the reason why I'm used to this type of food, or my childhood memories are this way of doing something, is because that's cheaper to be blunt. I never noticed.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So what family members kind of influence you the most?
Probably when I was younger, my parents, obviously. I was the oldest grandchild. So like aunts and uncles and grandparents, I was their first, you know, now they're an uncle, now they're an aunt. So I was lucky to have access to both my grandparents. I knew three of my great grandparents when I was little. And yeah, so I kind of, you know, had this, grew up with the stories ranging from the early 1900s through today, because I had access to all of them. So I think it was kind of that range that helped to kind of speak to how different people can be living in different times. And then my aunts and uncles were definitely, yeah, I'll just say my aunts and uncles and my family, I don't know.
Yeah, you were very close-knit group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As a child, what did you dream of being when you grew up?
I had no idea. At one point I wanted to be a teacher because I liked kids, but I didn't know if I wanted to have any, but I wanted to like hang out with them. And my mom explained that's not like, you don't get to go like shopping on the weekends with your students. I was like eight when I asked that. I love how people kind of light up when they learn something and how empowering that is to have knowledge. So I liked that idea of teaching. I wanted to be a fashion designer for a little bit. I never was one of those, I'm going to be this. Again, my mom was really awesome in that whenever we would be doing something, she would remind me that it was a professional person who did that. Like nice. When we were planning my bat mitzvah, when we went and talked to the party planners and we like met with a couple different ones to find the right one to like style the party, she told me, she's like, isn't this cool? This can be a job. Like you can design parties for a living. Or like she would point out like road signs and tell me how somebody designed those road signs and that, you know, I could be a road sign designer. Like it's kind of the opposite parent where they're like, you must be a this. My mom was always like, yeah, everything in this world exists because somebody made it. So what do you want to make for the world? And it was a very helpful mindset to have as a child.
Yeah, absolutely. What was one of the biggest challenges that you overcame in your youth?
In my youth, probably I wasn't very popular. Didn't have a lot of friends. I had friends at summer camp that were amazing, but in school, I definitely was not the popular kid. I mean, that was hard.
Were you lonely?
Not really, because I had the, you know, like my one or two best friends, and it was kind of like the three of us against everybody who thought we were losers. But I mean, that sounds so like tragic or like, you know, teen movie, but it's, you know, it is hard to know that like, you know, you're not one of the cool kids, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. And how did that affect you years later? Did it affect you? And
I think it makes me very self-conscious of other people. Like I'm aware of what it means to really kind of focus on what someone else thinks of you. And it makes me really conscientious of dealing with people. Like when I work with my staff, I want to make sure that they're appreciated, that they know that they're valued. I'm not a big fan of like sort of social games or like kind of weird, like popularity type stuff in general. And I don't really tolerate it in my life now, because as an adult, you know, like it doesn't matter if somebody invites you to their birthday party. That's not, you know, that's not going to make or break your life. But so I think it just makes me kind of more conscientious of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and as your life was kind of taking shape, or where did you go to college and what jobs did you start moving yourself into?
I didn't go to college. I had the honor of speaking with the absolutely amazing Academy Award winning Taika Waititi at Sundance several years ago. He hadn't won an Oscar yet, but he had just finished Thor Ragnarok. And I had the honor of asking him a question on a panel. And then my husband saw him just kind of outside smoking. It's Sundance, people are everywhere. And he was like, oh, you know, you can go say hi, thank him for answering your question. And we got to talking, and he was just being so nice and so respectful and treating me like a professional filmmaker. And I felt, at the time, I still had the sort of stigma of like, oh, I never went to film school, or oh, I never went to college. So finally I said to him, I was like, I feel bad. Like, you're talking to me like I'm a professional and you're, you know, treating me with all this respect. I'm like, I never went to film school. And he just leaned over to me and he said, "Neither did I."
Yeah, there's more than one path to make it to the top of the mountain.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, what a beautiful thing to say to you. Yeah.
Empowering.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So you had lots of different jobs that prepared you to get into filming, to becoming a filmmaker. You want to tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. When I was a teenager, I did think I was going to take more of like a business path, like a very, and I started learning, just taking classes in basic business stuff, just to learn more about what to do. And I kind of fell into the film and art world. I knew it was a career and people could do it, but I never really thought that I would. Yeah. I don't know why.
You didn't see yourself there at that time.
Yeah. I felt more drawn to business for some reason, just like, I don't know. I just did. Yeah. And then I ended up working with a friend kind of day playing on an event. And I mean, that's a story I've said a million times about how I ended up working with the art director for that event. And we connected. She was a wonderful person, is a wonderful person and mentor. And I worked with her for 10 years and she taught me everything I knew at the time about production design. And I took the opportunity to go to a rigging school and learned set and light rigging and how to build, you know, truss rigs and stages. And then I just started day playing as much as I could. And I would work with the electricians and I learned.
Day playing, that's a new term.
Yeah, it's common in the film industry. It means that you're not like if you're on a TV show, you're part of that crew, you're there every day. But if you're day playing, you're just working a day or two on the project. Or if you're a day player, you're not part of the main team that's always there. You're just kind of like there for a day or so.
Oh, it's a really fun term.
It is.
Yeah. Like,
and it was through that I got to just learn. I mean, some things I don't know. I'm a fan of the old school master and apprentice from like the medieval times where, you know, it is true. There are things like, you know, when I started working in lighting, I didn't, you know, start planning and doing all the cable runs from the generator my first day. That would have been insane. If anybody let me do that, it would have been potentially deadly and wrong.
Yeah.
But as I worked, you know, and I just asked questions and I learned about like the various parts of an electrical circuit and how it works and what different voltages are and all the different cables and how they work and all that stuff. So that eventually I got to the point where I could do a lighting design for a space and not just plan the lights, but plan like the layout of how it would all get powered and how it would all get set up and what types of cables we needed and all that. But I didn't do that day one. I did that several years after I'd been working in it. So I'm a big fan of recognizing that a dollar paycheck isn't always the only value of a job. And, you know, I did work for pay, but I also would take advantage if I could, you know, spend a couple hours with the makeup artist and ask questions, or not in an obnoxious way, but like if I could, you know, assist the makeup team for a day, even if it just meant that I could watch them and I could ask them questions, or if they could show me like, oh, this is how you do it. And so I learned the basics of makeup and hairstyling and wardrobe design. And I started learning cameras. I already knew lighting from events. And I worked with the budgets and planning of an event and then grew to where I was the one planning budgets.
So business kind of started coming in.
Yeah, the business. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's such an important part of being a successful entrepreneur. So, you know, you had that desire, you know, and the way in which you were thinking about things and you were learning about the numbers and what it costs to produce a film.
Yeah.
So what are your two core operating values?
Gosh, I don't know if I have two. I mean, if you're going to ask for two, I'll quote one of my favorite fairy tales, which is Cinderella. And at least in the Disney movies, say what you will about Disney today. Originally, Walt Disney said, "We don't make movies to make money. We make money to make more movies." And so I do have a lot of respect for the origins of that company. But anyway, there's a quote from Cinderella that I love, which is, "Have courage and be kind."
Very nice.
That's beautiful.
All right. So what else would you say is like some of the things that were very instrumental in developing your ability to be courageous?
There's a book called Number the Stars, which is actually a book about the Holocaust written from the perspective of a 12 or 13 year old girl. Oh. And she's Danish and her best friend is Jewish, but she never thought about it. Just she's blonde, her friend's brunette. That's just who they are. They're practically sisters. Her older sister was brunette just because, and she never thought anything of it. And that's where the idea of being brave has nothing to do with how scared you are. It has to do with what you do even when you are scared. And it's just this very powerful story of a little girl. I mean, she's not super little, but a young girl, I should say. And it was one of my favorite books as a kid growing up. I can't tell you how many times I've read it. I have a copy of it. And my husband got a special copy autographed for me a little while ago. That,
oh, sweet.
Cherished possession.
Well, when did you meet Spaceship?
So Spacey and I met through an online open collaborative platform called Hit Record. And we first encountered each other much the way you might walk past somebody going to the break room in an office. Like we kind of were aware of each other's existence. Although more, he was a very prominent figure. So I was probably aware of him before he was aware of me. And then we interacted a little bit on like one or two things, but specifically for the first season of Hit Record on TV, we had connected on Facebook just because a lot of Hit Recorders kind of connect outside of Hit Record. And he'd asked me if I could help with a music video that he was shooting. And this, anybody who knows us is going to be like, ugh, this story again. But
that's okay. Love stories are always fun to hear again.
I did the shoot that he had asked for the music video. And then that November, it was November 2013. I just kind of had missed like our little chats. I had a crush on him already. And I just sent him a quick message, kind of like, hey, what happened with the music video? Because I just kind of wanted to talk to him again.
Yeah.
That was November, the day before Thanksgiving. So it was a Wednesday, 2013, and we have talked, messaged, or seen each other, or texted, or whatever, every single day since.
Wow, that's beautiful. Oh, beautiful. Well, we're going to talk more. And what is the origin of his name?
It is his artist name, and it is after the Sean Lennon song, Spaceship.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
What's his real name, or his...
That's his name. That's like everything. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll go with it. All right. Well, that's terrific. We're going to close out with just some of your, do you want to talk about a little bit about Names on the Wall? And then we'll get into, in our next conversation, how filmmaking and entrepreneurship kind of merged more in-depthly for you and how you kind of built out your life and some 10 facts about how filmmaking and entrepreneurship are very similar.
Mm, for sure.
Okay. So Names on the Wall.
But gosh, there's so much I could say about that. Is there anything, any place you'd like me to start?
Well, so it came out in 2016. It's a short film.
Yeah.
And it's about the Holocaust. No, it's a war film.
It's about the Vietnam War. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought it was just, it would be really, how did you start it? How did you get the idea to even do the film?
Sure. So, yeah, Names on the Wall, it's a short film. Well, it's a longer short film. It's about 25 minutes. It's about the Vietnam War, and it's currently available on Amazon. And it originally was, I had someone who was looking at kind of potentially partnering to launch Space Dream Productions. And they wanted me to make a movie that they said could influence the world. That was their criteria. Mm-hmm. And I started just asking for scripts and anybody who had short film scripts to just, you know, any of my friends, if you have, you know, if you know anybody, just send them my way. And one of my very best friends since I was about 12, her husband is a writer. And she was like, you know, I can send you one of his. And she's, or I don't remember which one of them sent, doesn't matter. She sent it, he sent it, one of them, the script, and it was called Two Soldiers. And it was this really interesting story about these Vietnamese soldier and an American soldier kind of right in the middle of the war. It's a, you know, it was a short, I want to say it was like maybe 10 pages, the first draft. I mean, the finished draft, I think, is only like 12 or 13 pages. But I felt like there was a big piece of humanity in it. And it came down to that script. And then there was two other scripts that we were considering. And at the end of the day, I really felt like that script was going to be the best as far as how much it could capture so many different pieces of humanity. And it was kind of my first experience developing a script. I did, you know, I'd taken a ton of random classes and I had a ton of experience by that point. I'd already been working in and around film for about 10 years at that point. So I had seen a lot, but I'd never done this before. And so we really dove in and developed the story and kind of finalized the script. And then, like many things, we lost our funding. The DP wasn't working out. The director quit when we fired the DP. It was a whole exciting adventure.
Things not working.
I like to think that when you focus on where you're going and you kind of head there full steam ahead, the things that you don't need kind of break away. For the best. Sometimes when things break away, you know, you don't just want to let, you know, no internet meme level quote is all encompassing and applies to everything. You always have to kind of like adjust. But as a general rule, when you're kind of on a rocket ride and pieces start falling away and everything else just keeps speeding up, I kind of look at it like when you launch a spaceship into outer space, there's levels of rockets that break away and fall away as you accelerate and as you break through the atmosphere. And sometimes it's for the best. Sometimes it's what you need to get that boost that gets you to the next level. Not that, you know, people should be wasted or somebody, if it's a vital engine that's part of the rocket and that falls away, that's a problem. But it's not like, oh, it fell away. That's fine. Cora said that's fine.
Right. We missed the main character isn't there.
But sometimes it's the things that are weighing you down you have to let go of. If things kind of streamline and focus better when everybody's going in the same direction and aligned. And it really was a bit of a rocket ride. That was my first time directing and producing a full film. My team was incredible. When we needed a new director and as the producer, I was interviewing people and trying to hire one. One of the other crew members was like, why don't you direct it? And I was like, because I'm not a director. I don't know what you're talking about. And that kind of all developed and everything just kind of fell into place. And we had a really awesome festival run. And it ended up serving as the launch point for Space Dream Productions, which was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Well, that's a great place to leave our conversation for this time. And thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. And I love talking about, you know, creativity and innovation and your degree of excellence. And you have a lot of natural instincts for how you move through the world that I'm just starting to notice.
Thank you.
All right. And thanks for tuning in, everybody. And thanks for another great day. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. And we'll see you all next week.
Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a We Mentor Lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.